show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a baseball prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's been a couple weeks since we've recorded. Holidays and other things. Life has happened, as it often does, and so we unfortunately have had to take a longer break than expected, but we're back now. And I guess you could say fortunate or unfortunate for the prospects of our show, in terms of things that have happened. You could probably listen to this the day after we would have recorded the last show, and I don't know, or you could probably listen to the last show right before this one, and I don't know that you would have known there would have been 2 weeks in between if I hadn't told you, because literally nothing has happened.
So thanks for listening, suckers.
Yeah. Maybe we should have said that. We should have waited till the end to say that. But
we got their download. We're good.
That's right. And you don't come here for breaking news. You come here for the dulcet tones and sparkling personalities of myself and Michael Engel. So if I may be so bold as to make that proclamation, that's what we'll give you tonight. Or this morning, or whenever you're listening, because that's what we always give. So before we get into that, of course, I'm Jeff Hur, as always, and with me is the man who, despite no shows, never takes a break himself, hardest working man in podcasting, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this incredibly cold and bitter and awful weather-wise? Other than that, it's fine, but the weather's
right.
Awful.
If you ignore the freezing temperatures, it's great.
Yeah,
I'm all right. This is always a weird week because it's, you know, that week between Christmas and New Year's, and you know, nobody's in town, at least here in Lawrence. Had to go back to work. Didn't want to do that. It's cold. Just getting through it. So that's about it. And also, yeah, it's very cold. Though not as cold as yesterday. Yesterday was pretty foul. It was pretty bad. So I'm brilliant in that I went back home to visit family and looked at the forecast and thought, it'll be in the 30s. That's not too bad. I can get by with a sweatshirt and a hoodie. So I didn't take a coat. But I left on Tuesday when it was like 6 degrees outside. So I had to fill up gas in like a hoodie. And that was a terrible idea. That was a bad mistake. So I'm very smart in that regard. But I made it.
There you go. So in the meantime, since we've been freezing our butts off, not recording, there have been, you could say that the hot stove itself has been freezing its own butts off, because it's been incredibly cold and incredibly uneventful. And quite frankly, boring. As far as off seasons go, you know, obviously there was a dread from our standpoint as Royals fans. Moose, Hall, you know, we know the story. Everyone leaving, you know, to become free agents, theoretically leaving. I guess they haven't, you know, I mean, they're not Royals right now, but they still haven't signed anywhere else. They're not officially gone. I mean, they're officially gone, but not officially gone, as much as if that makes any sense. But point being, you know, as intrigued as many of us were, but if you move aside the dread of losing all these players that were such a big piece of this team, the intrigue that we had going into this offseason was pretty high, at least for me. I think you're on the same page as I am. Where were these guys going to go? What contracts were they going to sign? What benefit was that going to inure to the Royals from them signing somewhere else? You know, what the draft picks, the signing pool, all this stuff that was going to go in. There were all these different pieces in motion, and, you know, not only for the Royals, but this is the first year that this collective bargaining agreement has been in effect, and so there were all these different things. It would be interesting to see how just baseball as a whole tried to tackle all these new things that factored into these very important decisions of free agents and trades and all that stuff. So I think that was definitely a big intrigue for a lot of us, and there's been no intrigue. Nothing's happened. You know, the Shohei Ohtani, everyone thought that him signing was the big thing that was gonna kickstart everything, and then after that things were gonna fall into place. People were gonna go. He signed, and then nothing. We haven't heard anything. You know, Yu Darvish and J.D. Martinez are kind of the big ones, and so now everyone's kind of thinking that, you know, those two players are the ones that will start the domino effect, if you will. So, you know, it could be, I guess, but. Then if you kind of – it's interesting too because you kind of look at the other free agents and you see – you know, and you were just making this remark before we recorded, Mike, that it's those two big names, and, you know, Haas and Moose and Kane and all those guys are big names to us, you know, and they're known names to the rest of baseball, definitely, but they're not on that same level. And so it's kind of you, Darvish, and J.D. Martinez, and then it kind of this next step down, and then, you know, everybody else. And so the prevailing thought is kind of that those two will kind of start the market domino effect. But, you know, we saw the same thing a couple years ago in a smaller scale, but with everything that happened with Alex Gordon, and, you know, Jason Hayward was kind of seemed to be the market breaker, if you will, for that one. And then things kind of took a little bit longer than people were anticipating, and he ended up signing a huge deal, but you know, it's still just the length of time, I think, kind of depressed the market a little bit, and you got to wonder if the similar type of thing is going to happen here. You know, I still think Hosmer, whether it's the Royals or anybody else, you know, if this rumored 6-year $120 million deal that the Royals had offered previously and is presumably still on the table, if that is out there and Hosmer ended up coming back to the Royals and signed, that's still a huge contract. So he's going to get a huge contract one way or another. But it's just a matter of how the dominoes have fallen to this point, the very few dominoes that have actually fallen.
Yeah.
How is that going to affect where Hosmer ends up and the contract that he signs? And then how does that trickle down to Moose and to Kane, et cetera, et cetera? You know, what we thought was almost a guarantee that all three of those players get over that $50 million threshold to give the Royals the best possible compensation from the qualifying offer that they gave. We thought it was a near certainty after the qualifying offers came down. But now we're sitting here and you've got, you know, Hosmer's going to clear that threshold certainly no matter where he signs. But Moose most likely will, but you're a little bit less confident, or at least I'm a little bit less confident. And Kane now, just because – and this could be – maybe nothing has changed. Maybe it's just all – this is baseball still operating the same and still thinks those guys have the same value. But, you know, the natural inclination, and it's been somewhat proven in past years with how things have gone, when the longer things take, the greater the drops – in overall values of contracts and years, et cetera, teams get desperate, players get desperate, they'll make some compromises, they'll take a deal that comes along, so on and so forth. So, you know, now it's looking – now I think it's much more feasible for many people to think that Lorenzo Cain could sign somewhere for less than $50 million. And to be honest, you got to think, well, if he's going to sign somewhere for less than $50 million, then why not make it the Royals and just bring him back? But – who knows? You know, we'll see on that one. But it's, I mean, you know, as boring as it's been, it almost kind of adds a little bit to the intrigue because we've gotten such a lesser degree of information than we have in years past that I think there's been more speculation maybe than in years past because no one's got any information to go on. So everyone's just like, well, I kind of heard this thing, so I guess we can extrapolate this much and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's – while it's been boring, it's almost – it's like those really intense like defensive football games, you know, or like a pitcher's duel, you know, yeah. Where you know, like – you're on the edge of your seat because that one thing could happen and just completely change the complexion of the entire game. So, you know, we don't – no one receives any information. The information isn't as plentiful as it has been in years past, probably because there isn't any. But that one piece that could happen is just kind of, oh, this could start everything. A chain reaction and then a bunch of signings happen. We've seen it happen before. So I don't know. But, I mean, you kind of feel the way I do. You feel now more – I don't want to say confident, but like it's more, it's a greater possibility that Kane or even Moose could sign below that $50 million threshold.
Yeah, I think there's a real definite possibility of that for those two. You know, when we talked about it earlier, Kane was the guy we kind of thought, because of his age primarily, might end up running into that kind of thing. But Moustakas is also someone who, you know, his body type and the significant knee injury that he had 2 years ago, those things, you know, despite his 38 homers last year, you know, those are still things that, you know, if you're a team looking out there and you have the prospect of signing a 4 or 5 year deal with this guy, you got to think about what's Mike Moustakas going to be doing, you know, in 4 years. How is that knee going to hold up? And how's it going to impact his conditioning and his swing and everything else? So I guess I can see the hesitancy there. You know, Hosmer, I think he's probably going to be safe no matter what. He's kind of got that pedigree and he's got enough buzz to him that he might not get the deal that he wants, but he'll probably get a deal that's comfortable at least. So that's probably something. But just looking at it overall, there's still so many names out there. We're less than 2 months basically from pitchers and catchers reporting, and 9 of the top 10 free agents on MLBTradeRumors.com of their free agent rankings have not signed anywhere. And the 10th guy was Masahiro Tanaka, who just opted into the 3 more years of his original contract. So it's just like this group of quality players that just have not signed anywhere, qualifying offer or otherwise. So it's very strange to kind of see how everything has just ground to a halt, and it could just flip just like that. You know, it just takes one player to sign, and now teams start thinking, okay, now everybody's going. But right now, you know, owners just seem pretty content to sit and wait. And, you know, what it comes down to is, you know, look at where Mike Moustakas might go. We talked about the Angels, and the Angels might be a great fit for him. He grew up close to there. You know, they have an opening. They have a lot of money. They're in position to make a jump. And then they go and they sign Zach Cozart. And even though he's been a shortstop, they're going to play him at third base. Well, that really takes out a key player for Moustakas. Now, who knows what his market is? The Giants may have been a fit, but they just traded for Evan Longoria. You know, there aren't a lot of third basemen out there, but there's also the point where if you have the option, you could just as easily go sign Todd Frazier, and you don't have to give up any kind of draft pick compensation, no international spending money, and you know, you don't have to worry about the qualifying offer because Frazier didn't receive one. So that's really going to hold up Moose at this point. Just general questions plus the logistical questions of just the contract and the CBA. And it's pretty similar for like Lorenzo Cain, and he's even kind of up against a lot of other options where, yeah, he's elite defensively and he's been very good with the bat, but he's also 32 years old. And, you know, how many teams really want to commit 4 or 5 years to a guy at that age when you can probably go out and get Rajai Davis for 2 years or Cameron Maven for 2 years or Jahri Dyson for 2 or 3 years or something and probably be just about as good at center field overall or, you know, maybe a little bit less. You know, if you're a team that feels like you can get by, do you really want to give up all of the draft pick and you know, farm system building collateral that you can just to sign Lorenzo Cain? Maybe, but, you know, I can see why that would make people hesitate. And then Eric Hosmer runs into where there's just a lot of first basemen out there. Already, Carlos Santana is the only player who received a qualifying offer to sign somewhere, signed with the Phillies. So, you know, it can be done. But his contract was only $60 million, only $60 million. but that's the high watermark right now. I mean, that's the biggest contract of the year, 3 years, $60 million. You know, most of the guys who signed are a bunch of relief pitchers who signed 1 or 2 year deals. Or maybe, you know, spot starter type guys, number three, number four, number five starter types who signed 2 or 3 year deals. Just not a whole lot. But, you know, Yonder Alonso, talked about him a while back. He signed with Cleveland. The Red Sox seemed like a great fit for Hosmer, but they went and re-signed Mitch Moreland for 2 years. So, you know, that just takes those guys out. And Matt Adams was floating around as a free agent. And he signed with Washington, and he'll come off the bench. So it really starts to limit a lot of the teams that need a first baseman, plus teams that just, you know, if they really feel like they only need to wait a couple of years, you're looking at, you know, guys like Logan Morrison and Mark Reynolds, and now Adrian Gonzalez has been traded to the Braves and then released. So he's available for the league minimum. So it's just a really weird market for him. So even though Hosmer's got the best pedigree and best chance to get that big deal, he's also up against a lot of alternatives that don't cost the same that he would. And a lot of that is just working against him. But it's not just those guys. It's basically everybody. You know, the big names that have moved are, you know, Longoria, Matt Moore, Chase Headley, Marcelo Zuna, and Giancarlo Stanton. And those are all via trades. So, you know, that's kind of what has been going on so far. And it's been basically maybe 3 days of a lot of trade action and then like 2 days of a lot of relief pitchers and then nothing else this offseason. So, yeah, I mean, I think any of those guys could possibly end up falling under that $50 million threshold. Hosmer's the least likely, but it's not impossible. You know, they kind of have to go where teams are willing to pay him. It reminds me of a couple of years ago when Irvin Santana, his agency came out and said he was looking for a $100 million contract. Well, yeah, sure.
So am I.
Me too, yeah. I mean, I would love to – I would gladly take that, but it's got to be there. And if that offer is not there, you got to take what teams will offer you. And at a certain point, it's like you said, they start to get antsy and the players feel like they want to land somewhere. And if someone comes along and they say, hey, I'll give you 4 years and – $70 million, you might just go ahead and settle for that when you were looking for $7 and $140, you know, just because you got to get something and you got to land somewhere and you don't want to be, you know, the one left out at the end. So it is kind of intriguing in the boringness of it all because, you know, you have to wonder why this is happening and when it's going to break. And, you know, I don't think it's going to be a situation where anybody's left standing after June, kind of like Kendrys Morales a few years ago, where a team just doesn't get any compensation because they signed after the draft and, you know, there's no draft pick to compensate with. But, you know, it might be something where it is still a couple weeks out before some of these guys find homes. And that's kind of strange because you kind of figured that it might be a pretty active market because there are a lot of pretty good names out there. So, you know, I don't know when it's going to change, but it's kind of been this agonizing wait to just find out what happens and when and nothing's happening.
Yeah. And even if nothing had happened before, you know, there was a momentum. You know, they felt like there was leading toward, you know, oh, well, this team's whispering about this team. You know, I brought up a couple of years ago with Alex Gordon and the Jason Hayward situation and all that. Well, you know, there were still a lot of rumors about where Jason Hayward might end up and, you know, who was talking to him, you know, whether it was the Cubs or the Cardinals or whoever else. And, you know, there's just none of that. You know, I mean, and you had remarked to me in an email when we were talking about the show this week that just – there just doesn't seem to be a lot of heat around Darvish and JD Martinez. And, you know, not only is it odd just because you know, normally there's more information and those are the two biggest free agents, but it's not like I don't know if I can think of an example off the top of my head, but it's not like it's a scenario where, you know, the value of the top free agents are inflated because it's a poor free agent pool. Like Yu Darvish is a difference making pitcher. JD Martinez is a difference making hitter. And there's still just nothing. It's so strange. And, you know, this talk of people are kind of whispering now, like, especially with Mike Moustakas seems to be the one catching the most of this about the sign a 1 year deal and play it out and then come back to free agency next year. I mean,
yeah.
Does that make any sense? Is there a world where that's the best case scenario for Mike Moustakas? Like,
that's a terrible idea for Mike Moustakas because
right?
Like, Manny Machado and Josh Donaldson are free agents next year. Like, why on earth would you want to compete against those guys? You're not even the consolation prize. You're like the participation trophy of that free agent yes. class at third. I mean, it's like it's not going to get any better for a team, you know. So, plus, it's also I find it kind of funny that the guy has a career high in home runs and juiced ball or not. Now there's a suggestion that he needs to prove it on a 1 year deal. It's like, well, okay, come on. I mean, yeah, I don't know. His best thing would probably be to try to get a 2 year deal just so that he can skip that big class, you know, next winter, just because I don't know how you even get a meeting with Donaldson and Machado out there. You know, no matter what you do, you know, he could go to Yankee Stadium and hit 55 homers. It's still not going to get him a better deal than Machado or Donaldson.
No,
you know, just doesn't matter. It's not going to happen. So
especially when Machado is going to be what, 4 years younger than him.
Right. And you know, is legitimate MVP caliber player. It's just, yeah, I mean, that's the last thing I think that Moustakas is looking at. So he might take something that's a pretty low average annual value just to get some kind of like 3 or 4 year certainty, you know, even if he's only going to make like $14-15 million a year. I don't know. Again, I don't know who the heck is going to make that offer. MLB trade rumors predicted the Braves. I guess they could still be in the market. The Yankees are still a good fit. The Mets have kind of popped up as something, but man, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, there's just a lot of teams that I figure can probably deal with getting by with some guy at third, you know, if they don't have a pressing need and a big hole at third base. So it's tough. It's tough to see where it fits. I think they'll land somewhere, but it's just like, yeah, I mean, if you're Moustakas, you definitely don't want to be going into that. That's
no.
That's just like you're good luck. You're not going to find much of anything in that kind of group.
Yeah, so I think with Moose, maybe a little bit more. There's at least some validity, I guess, to the idea of trying to kind of play into another contract. The 1 year thing, as you well established, is a bad idea. 2 years, you're starting to get a little bit closer to something that's a feasible reality. You know, if you're Moose, if you were to sign a 2 year contract, say you sign one for 2 years, $32 to $35 million maybe a year, I don't know. And you played that out, you'd be 30, 31-ish. By the time he rolls on, if he has two more years where he hits over 35 home runs, you know, then you start looking, okay, he's going to get some money, you know, but, and, you know, especially with him losing that season to the ACL tear, you know, which didn't seem like it was going to be an issue a little while ago, but now I don't know how teams are viewing it, but now could be more so than they thought. You know, I mean, if the juiced ball is going to go away, if you're possibly taking Moose into a, I mean, if you were to go to LA, I think as far as park factors are concerned, I think that plays pretty close to Kauffman, actually. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know off the top of my head. I don't know that it's, you know, it's, I mean, a lot of parks are more friendly than Kauffman, of course, but I don't know that it's a ton more. It's not like if you were to go to Baltimore and play in Camden or Fenway or something. So, you know, you're not going to get a huge boost of production just from the park factor. And then if the juiced balls are going down and if you're worrying about, you know, the concern with Moose was always going to be his body type and playing a demanding position like third base, is he going to be able to hold up? And he has been so far. You know, that the ACL tear was a freak thing, but now that he's had that recovery and he obviously got hobbled at the end of last year, who knows if it was something that would have happened anyway or if it was, you know, because of the I mean, it was likely because of the ACL tear and recovery and all that. So, you know, a lot of those things will factor in, and it's really interesting to see kind of how that's developed. I really didn't think, you know, given how good his 2015 was and how good this year was, I think I would have thought that people, teams would have been pretty convinced that he was, you know, worth a good amount of money, but who knows? You know, now at this point, especially since it's been this long, maybe teams are starting to kind of talk themselves out of signing someone like, well, you know, he's got the body issues, he's had the leg injury, if the juice ball's going down, is his home run total going to stay up? If that doesn't stay up, you know, is he going to be able to bring his batting average back up to 2015 levels to keep that going? You know, where does the value come from with Mike Moustakas moving forward? So that's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to it, but I got to think at this point, that's what teams are asking each other, or not asking each other, asking themselves.
The one thing that kind of works in his favor for right now is that there isn't a really big group of third baseman alternatives. Frazier's really the only guy. Yunel Escobar is out there too, but that's kind of it. You know, Eduardo Nunez is around, but then you start getting into guys like, you know, Darwin Barney and Trevor Plouffe, your favorites. Cliff Pennington, maybe. You know, Danny Valencia is out there too, but he played primarily first base last year. So, you know, there's just not a lot of guys that you would see getting like a significant, like, you know, we're going to give you an offer and we really want you to come here and play regularly at third base. You know, they're pretty much guys who are going to be utility types or backup types or, you know, split their time somehow. So, you know, if you're a team that is looking for that type of player, Moustakas is kind of one of two options there, whereas Hosmer and Kane have a lot of other guys who are at least passable full-time options for that position. So that might work out for him, that there really aren't a lot of ways that you can go if you do want a third baseman. You know, Longoria's off the market. He's not going to get traded. Machado's probably not going to get traded, even though Baltimore's been shopping him. If they do trade him, maybe Moustakas does go to Camden for 2 years and they just kind of see what happens. But, you know, I don't know. I think they're, you know, the Braves, Yankees, Mets, those could be options. Or, you know, maybe back to the Royals, though I think he's maybe the least likely to return to the Royals if it came down to it. I think it would go Hosmer, Kane, Moustakas.
You think so?
I think so, because they've got Chester Cuthbert there. They've
I don't
got
necessarily
Hunter
disagree.
Dozier.
Run through your logic on that. I think you're about to, but
yeah, they have alternatives there. You know, whereas they have literally the next guy up at center field is Paulo Orlando, and that's just not going to cut it. Bubba Starling, but Bubba Starling, really, I don't think the Royals expect anything from him anymore. You know, you've got some guys in the lower minors, but they're not really anybody you're thinking about. So third base, at least you've got Cuthbert, who felt like, you know, somebody. He played better at the end of last year, filled in great in 2016, could definitely be an option there full-time. They've got Hunter Dozier, who they still like, who has played third base, you know, could be another guy there. So I just don't see that there's a huge need for the Royals to do that, especially when they're looking at, you know, a team next year that they can't really imagine is going to be super competitive. You know, we've talked about it. You look at the teams that are better than them. They're probably the fourth best team talent-wise right now. And granted, they've got a lot of holes. They still need to fill them out. But, you know, I would say that the White Sox have probably jumped past them just because they have such a good farm system. And they have a couple guys that are, you know, top 10 overall prospect type of guys in Moncada and Gleyber Torres. It's just, you know, those are the kinds of players that can really make a difference right away. And they're pretty close to the big leagues. So that puts the Royals in a spot where they're not even, like, in the conversation going forward for the next couple of years. And, you know, I don't see a big need for someone like Moustakas there. Whereas at least Kane, you might be able to bring him in and he plays well and you can, you know, he's definitely has opportunity to use him. And if it comes down to it, in 2 years, maybe you have an opportunity to trade him. Eric Hosmer, they love. And he's probably 50-50 to go back to the Royals. The only reason, like, the only hint of any kind of offer that has even popped up from anybody else has been San Diego, and they're rebuilding. So I don't know why, you know, it's weird that there are two teams that should be rebuilding who are looking at Eric Hosmer. I was like, well, okay. Your best case is, like, the fifth year or sixth year of a six-year contract is when your guys are ready, and now you can't even, you know, you invest all this time and money into one guy, and he's not really, you know, part of the hardest work, which is rebuilding a team to be a major league contender. And so I don't know. I don't know where he's going to end up, but I think Hosmer definitely improves any team that he lands on. I think the Royals would probably be better with him. But at the same time, they've got Hunter Dozier. He could play first base. They've got Brandon Moss. He could play first base. The Royals could go out and get one of those guys like John Jaso, Mark Reynolds, Logan Morrison, whatever, and just get by for a couple of years and see where they're at. And I don't think that there would be really that big of a change in the standings or the profitability of the team. And really, you know, I think they're better off probably long-term with Hosmer signing anywhere, because they get that draft pick and they get that draft pool money, and you know, they get more shots to hit. You know, they get more lottery tickets. They get more, you know, entries in the contest to see if they can actually hit on a good draft pick. So, I'd like to see all of these guys back, but I think the logical thing is that they all probably should not come back, and it's probably for the best. But of those three in particular, yeah, Moustakas is definitely, like, the least likely, I think, that the Royals would probably look at bringing back. But, I mean, it could still happen. It's not like any of these three guys left on bad terms or fell out of favor. They're all three, you know, good leaders and productive players. So the Royals would love to have them back. It's just a matter of, you know, actually having the money and the accounting work out. And I just don't know if that's going to happen for any of them, but especially not Moose.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, through this whole time, and we've kind of touched on it a little bit on this show already, but the San Diego thing is just – it's perplexing to me. I guess not so much that San Diego would try and court Hosmer, because, you know, they just kind of beat to their own drum, if you will. But the idea that – I mean, I guess you're going to – if you're Hosmer, you're going to entertain any offer that's in the range that you want money-wise. But at the same time, you know, if – unless San Diego is – coming well over the top of the Royals, if you're going to go to a rebuilding team and essentially be kind of the star, you know, San Diego's obviously has its perks over Kansas City in terms of just the actual location of the city itself and everything that goes with it. But that aside, depending on how important that is to someone like Eric Hosmer, I mean, If your options are going to a rebuilding, or if your only option is to go to a rebuilding team, and the money is the same or close to it, then why wouldn't you stay in Kansas City? Because in San Diego, he's the big money guy that's coming from out of town, and he better perform. And if he doesn't, fans will turn quick. It happens everywhere, every time if somebody doesn't perform.
Mm-hmm.
But in Kansas City, if he doesn't perform, yeah, there'll be people that will criticize. But at the same time, he's revered in Kansas City, and he is going to be beloved for his entire career by Kansas City just because of how big of a part he took in the World Championship. So, and he's already got a face. He's already established. He's already, you know, one of the biggest stars in the city. So, I mean, I don't know. And I'm not saying he should come back, because we already talked about where the Royals fit, or where he fits with the Royals next year. And as you said, I'm with you on the fact that he makes them better. But another interesting wrinkle to this is, and we kind of talked about this in emails earlier today, you know, there are – if you were to see – we talked about Darvish and J.D. Martinez being kind of the top of the top, if you will. But if there's like a top tier of free agents, you would put Moose, Haas, and Kane in that top tier, but probably closer to the bottom, I would guess. And that being the case, you know, they're players that instantly make your team better. They are going to be very valuable pieces of a championship team, or could be very valuable pieces of a championship team, like they have been already once in their careers. But they're not that player that turns you into a championship team. So, you know, if you – I don't necessarily know that someone – you know, you, Darvish, could be that player, I think. J.D. Martinez, I don't know. he's performed, and he's been consistent the last few years. But I don't – maybe it's just because he kind of somewhat came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it just was for me because I didn't pay as much attention to him when he was younger. But I don't know. It's just I still am reluctant to buy in fully to J.D. Martinez, but I'm probably wrong in that because he's obviously proven himself multiple times now over the last few years. So, but you know, if you're talking Eric Hosmer versus, and it's not really a fair comparison to say someone like Mike Trout, but just to as an example of, you know, Mike Trout's a guy that any team that is already a contender, you put him on that team, they're immediately a World Series contender. You know, and the Angels are, even though they've struggled the last few years, you know, they've had their struggles within the last few years, like, they're still always kind of thought of in the back of their minds, well, the Angels have Mike Trout, and now they've got Shohei Ohtani, and, I mean,
Justin Upton, they traded for Ian Kinsler. Yep. I mean, they're going for it this year.
They're going ham sandwich, if you will. They're in on 2018. So, and you know, if they didn't have Mike Trout, he would be that guy that put him over the edge. So Hosmer's not that guy. I mean, I guess if you were like if you're like really, really close to the edge, like on the edge but not quite over it, then maybe Hosmer's that guy that puts you over. But unless you're already pretty much there. You know, he's more of a – he and Moose and Kane are more of a solidify a base of a roster more than, you know, be that shining light at the top. So with all those metaphors, I think you get what I'm saying. But the point being is that it puts an interesting twist on all this stuff because they're good enough, valuable enough, and the reputation, which is always more important than it should be in free agent signings, is good enough that they're going to warrant – and be able to demand those kinds of contracts without it seeming outlandish. But at the same time, teams have to fight and wrestle with the idea of, okay, is this really best for the team? Is this going to put us over the top? And if we don't decide we want to do this and somebody else does, what's that going to mean for us? Are we then scared of this other team because they have Eric Hosmer and we don't? And are we going to regret that we didn't pay the money to get him there? You know, that's the kind of the stuff that doesn't really get talked about, but it's kind of a fascinating aspect of how baseball works in the off season and how teams really evaluate these players and you know how they try and decide what's best for their team. So the way the Hosmer thing has unfolded has been, even as quiet as it's been really interesting to see how it has, because we all thought, you know, New York, Boston for sure, one of those places would bite, but Boston's sticking with Bird and, New York is sticking with Bird and Boston signed Mitch Moreland. And now San Diego's the only thing we've heard. And it's like, San Diego, what the hell? And then, So, you know, who knows, man? It's the Hosmer thing has been really kind of interesting to me. And, you know, before all free agency started in earnest, I remember there was an article from Sam Mellinger talking about how, you know, what things had to occur in order for Hosmer to return as a Royal. And, you know, I don't think they've exactly gone as he mentioned, but it's basically the same script that he laid out, to where if, you know, the Yankees are going to decide they don't want a first baseman, Boston's going to decide they don't want to, or they sign somebody else. You know, all these other teams that we all thought that he might end up with decide they don't want him or don't need him. And the Royals, because of the value intrinsically of just having Eric Hosmer on the roster, are still going to pony up that money if they can. And then Eric Hosmer would just say, okay, you know what? I'll just take it. Whatever. I'll be a Royal for my whole life. I already won a World Series. I'll cruise, and that'll be that. I'll take my $120 million and ride off into the sunset. You know, stranger things have happened. So it's it'll be interesting. You know, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it all. I don't know. It's I'm really curious. I really want stuff to start picking up because I'm really curious, you know, to hear more information about how other teams are viewing these players, because we don't really have a ton of information. It's kind of annoying.
Yeah, it's just not a lot of feedback on any of it. You know, as you were talking about all that, it made me kind of think about these three guys and how, you know, how they fit into any team who's ready. And it kind of reflects how the Royals came together, because they had a lot of these guys who are very good. I mean, they're good players. They're going to be effective players for whoever gets them. But you ended up with all of these guys together at the same time on a couple of teams where things worked out pretty well. And I think that's kind of interesting to think back about, you know, the whole run of the Royals and the playoffs and everything, just to think about that. But, I mean, I think you add these guys on any team, they're going to be solid. You know, if they're going to a contender, they're going to make that contender better. If they're a team that's up and coming, they're going to make that team better. It's just, I don't know, everything's just stuck right now. I think the Mellinger article that you talked about is like, it is kind of shaping up that way, but I also think that when he wrote that, he was thinking more along the lines of isolated to Hosmer and really like, okay, this market doesn't develop for Hosmer as aggressively or as quickly or as lucratively as anybody expected, and the Royals can jump in and maybe get some value in there and bring back somebody that they want. And it's just that's happening for everybody. So I'm really surprised that it's gone that way. You're hearing nothing about like Jake Arrieta. You hear hardly anything about Lance Lynn. Greg Holland there for a bit was kind of on the cusp of some things. Wade Davis has been brought up, but like nobody's talking about any of these players. So I don't know where things are going. I'm with you. I want things to start happening. More or less, because then we can start to think about, well, what does the next year and what do the next few years look like for the Royals specifically, for these players that we followed for so long, and, you know, how everything fits together. Because right now we're just kind of I don't have an answer for it. I can kind of guess at some of the things. You know, one thing we talked about in the emails was that – you know, for all these guys, there's some kind of compensation that you have to lose as the signing team, since they were offered qualifying offers. But you look at the big teams, the luxury tax type of teams that you would normally think would be splashing in this pool. You know, the teams like the Dodgers and Yankees don't have a strong need for most of these guys. Moustakas is maybe possible on the Yankees, but they're also trying to look at next year and get themselves under the luxury tax so that they can make a run at Bryce Harper, Clayton Kershaw, or, you know, Andrew Miller, Craig Kimbrell, or whoever. Team like Boston seems singularly focused on Martinez, and with, you know, the signing of Moreland, they really don't need Hosmer. So they're not really in the mix. The Giants are pretty much rebuilding. Any draft picks they would give up would be the second draft pick of that round, because they have the number two overall pick. And the Tigers paid in the luxury tax, and they're also rebuilding. So there's not much point for them to sign these guys. So the big guys who would drive those markets just aren't involved. you know, and everybody else is just kind of either filled in, like Cleveland and Philadelphia and others, or they already have somebody. So it's just like, I don't know. It's just strange to see it happen. Whereas, you know, 2 months ago really felt like, okay, you know, we're going to say goodbye to these guys, and they've got the kind of pedigree and resume that would make you think that they'll probably get signed fairly quickly. And, you know, it's just, it's happening to nobody. And it's really bizarre. I've seen people bring up the idea of collusion. I can't imagine that that would actually be anything that would get real traction, because, I mean, you look at labor relations in baseball, they have a very decent relationship. A lot of years without any kind of labor strife. They just got the new CBA. I think the last thing you want to try to do is, even if it does benefit you on the bottom line, is to even get in the mix of anything looking like collusion. That just,
didn't they get in trouble for that in like the 80s or something?
Yeah, it was in 87. There was a lot of that. And it was really, I mean, it's a similar pattern, but, you know, little different circumstances in the way of compensation and luxury taxes and things like that. So, you know, it just – and also it wasn't as big a money sport revenue-wise, payroll-wise, and anything like that. So I can't imagine that they would ever even float that idea and have enough people take to actually execute it, because it just seems like that's suicide. So that's just – I can't imagine that, but I don't know. I mean, maybe it can't be out of the realm of possibilities, I suppose. But it just kind of seems to me more like teams recognize that everybody else is waiting. And so why do we need to get worked up if nobody else is moving? Especially when some of these markets, outside of like pitching, you don't really have to make a move yet. So they're just kind of waiting to see. And if it's maybe not conscious, maybe they're just waiting because they feel like they will get that value. So I don't know. It's a very strange off season, and yeah, like we've said, simultaneously boring but intriguing. But I'm kind of over it now. I want these guys to sign and have some actual answers and things to, you know, actually consider versus sitting here and guessing. It's a little frustrating as a fan.
Yes, most definitely. I don't know. I mean, we're coming up on January here in just a few days, 2018 already. And pitchers and catchers report end of February, right? So there's usually a countdown somewhere. I don't run one myself, but so essentially, you're looking at like 6 weeks here for all these pieces to come into place, you know, because, I mean, you need to get everything ready to go and then get them, you know, geared up for to go into spring training. So, I mean, things should really start moving here soon, please.
Right.
I hope. It's been an interesting offseason in the worst way possible. And yeah. Because, you know, I mean, it's sad to see all those players go from the Royals, but at the same time, there was kind of an excitement because it's like, hey, you know, we know these players are free agents, and, you know, normally I don't care about other teams signing other players, but, you know, it at least gave some sort of connection I have to, okay, I have a reason to follow Eric Hosmer, Lorenzo Cain, and Mike Moustakas and see where they go and free agents other than the obvious of what that means to the Royals. So, I don't know. But,
yeah,
that's been robbed from me.
Yep. So. Yeah, it's, I mean, yeah, we had that little blip from the winter meetings for about 3 days. That's about it. Nothing else has happened.
That is about it.
That's just, I don't know. Yeah, I keep checking my Royals and my baseball Twitter feeds, and just to see maybe something will happen while we're sitting here recording. Nope. Nothing has happened.
Nope.
Still nothing. But hopefully, now that we're past Christmas, past the holiday season, I mean, we got New Year's, but New Year's doesn't count. New Year's sucks. We're past that. Maybe now teams will start doing stuff. I don't know. I mean, eventually, someone's got to sign these guys, right?
You would think.
I hope so, for their sake, if nobody else's, because I don't know. It's a tough industry to be unemployed in, I imagine.
Yes, it is. So, and we've seen players have that have gone through that before, you know, with the Kendrys Morales, as you mentioned, and Irvin Santana did it as well. So it's not unheard of that they have to wait, but like there's no real reason they have to wait anyway. That's kind of the way the CBA was designed, the way it was designed, so that you eliminated that. So
right.
The idea of a player as high profile as any of these three not being signed before spring training is just asinine. I think at some point, if it got to that point, I gotta think David Glass would just say, you know what?
The heck with it.
I got a huge tax break coming with this new tax law.
We've got the MLB advanced media money.
We got a future TV contract coming up. So let's just pump all this money back into the franchise, get the band back together, re-sign Hosmer, re-sign Moose, re-sign Lorenzo Cain. They're Royals for life. We're going to win another World Series. It's all going to happen. It's all falling into place. Royals going to have a $200 million payroll. That's my prediction. Royals. The Royals will be luxury taxed next year. That's how this thing all goes down. And they still...
Would they get their own revenue sharing? Would that work? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. They still... They would still win 79 games.
Probably. The other thing of all of that, right, the other part of that is that, like, for what they would want to do, they would have to trade so many guys away just to get them off the payroll to make it work. It was just like, well, it's tough to see it working out, but I don't know. Maybe it fits. It's very strange. All of it. Very weird.
Indeed. So I think on that note, I
yeah.
leave you. Hopefully,
hopefully there's something.
Please, baseball gods, give us something to talk about next week when we will be talking to you from 2018.
Yeah.
And since we didn't get to record last couple weeks, you know, we'll give a belated Merry Christmas. We could say it again. Merry Christmas, happy holidays to everyone.
Yeah.
And happy New Year.
Stop saying it.
Yeah. Happy New Year as well to everyone in the Baseball Vault family. Whatever holidays you celebrate, we hope they were glorious and fun, and we hope you got to listen to a little base, even though we didn't give you a new episode to listen to. Maybe you had something to catch up on, and if so, hope you got that taken care of. And Happy New Year to you. And if you're looking to have a good time in Kansas City on New Year's or just in this Christmas holiday break period, why don't you head on over to our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn. They're fantastic. They've been with us since damn near the beginning.
Pretty much.
And they have been a huge part of the success of this show. And it's one of the reasons why they're sponsored us, because we go in there, you know, well before they ever became a sponsor, because it's a great place. So if you're hankering to go out to Westport, brave the cold and have some fun, head over to Kelly's Westport Inn. Great place, of course. And then if you're looking to stay inside and stay warm, then why don't you go and check out bpkansascity.com, because we're putting out great content there all the time. No break, no off season for the BPKansasCity.com and all the fantastic writers we have there. So still pumping out great content there. So you got plenty to do, plenty of options to not only have fun, but to support this show while you're at it, if you feel so inclined. Thank you all so much for listening. Couldn't do it without you. Love all you guys, listeners. Hope you had a great holiday season. Hope it continues to be great. Have a great new year. Hopefully we'll have some news, some baseball news in the world of baseball coming in, and hopefully that it happens soon. We'll be able to talk about it next week, as all three Royals will probably sign 10 minutes from the time we sign off here. But at least if that happened, we'd have something to talk about next week. So hopefully that's the case. We'll have something to talk about next week. But it'll be 2018, so time moves ever forward, and in the words of the great Kurt Vonnegut, so it goes. But we will see you in 2018. We'll be talking more Royals, and it will officially be – I think once you cross the calendar year, I think then you can legitimately start the countdown for pitchers and catchers reporting. So maybe we'll have that. But until then – I will see you next time. Thank you so much for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.